Live. Good evening. We'd like to welcome everybody to the Josephine County Rural Planning Commission. Would you please join me and stand and salute the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And good evening. The meeting of the Josephine County Planning Commission will be conducted according to the Josephine County Land Use Hearing Rules found in Article 31 of Josephine County Rural Land Development Code, Sections 197-763 of the Oregon Revised Statutes, which govern the conduct of all public hearings. A summary as follows. The planning staff will identify and explain criteria and standards applicable to this request. Testimony and evidence is to be directed to the criteria and standards. If you feel other criteria or standards apply and are not identified, you must raise the issue to the chair for a ruling. If the chair rules that additional standards apply, then testimony and evidence may be directed to them. Clearly raise and explain your issues in this hearing in order to be understood by the commission. Before conclusion of the hearing, any participant may request a continuance to submit new evidence or testimony. The commission must decide to either grant the continuance or keep the record open. In either case, the period of time must be at least 7 days. During the time of the open record, anyone may submit additional written testimony or evidence. All persons testifying are considered a witness unless a person asks to be recognized as a party, and the chair rules the person has party status. Party status is established in three ways. One, anyone who receives official mailed notice and testifies orally or in writing in this hearing. Two, anyone who testifies orally or in writing in this hearing who did not receive official mailed notice but establishes the use or enjoyment of their property is adversely affected by the impacts from this proposed use or development that is different from the public at large. And three, someone who is aggrieved by an adverse decision. The chair will wait until you finish testifying to make a ruling on your party status. Participants are obliged to know and follow the rules and procedures. The planning staff present has a copy of the rules. The first item on the agenda is number 3.1. Let me make sure I got the right one. 3.1, seven-lot subdivision for single-family residential. And as soon as she's done, we'll do a roll call and then start the meeting.
Commissioner Wright?
Present.
Commissioner Chambers?
Present.
Commissioner Dorte?
Present.
Commissioner Ockenden?
Here.
Commissioner DeSimone?
Here.
Commissioner Shakiri? Commissioner Gardner.
Thank you. And we have a quorum, so we can continue on. Staff, please present the report.
Good evening. Nora Schwartz, Josephine County Planning. As you can see, my first slide is just some general information indicating the owner applicant, the representative from Rhinecross Group who will be presenting this evening is Mark Cross, one of the principals, and we are going to be taking a look at and approving, hopefully, the tentative plan for the Yonser subdivision. We're looking at seven lots at the sizes indicated, and they are all to be served by a brand new proposed rural residential road. And in your packets, Exhibit A has all the application materials that were turned in by Rhinecross Group. The reason we're here before the Planning Commission this evening is because, as it says at the bottom of this slide, when more than 50% of the land in the subdivision contains granitic soils. In this particular instance, the entire property is covered with granitic soils. Here's a bit of background. As I'm sure you've recognized in looking at your packets, we are looking at property that is in the urban reserve. And I put a bit of explanatory information about what the urban reserve is in relation to an urban growth boundary. You can see the life cycle up until this evening of this application. It started out as an 8-lot subdivision. We had some missing information, and the applicant then came back with corrected information, and the application was ultimately cut down to 7 lots, and earlier this month, I received a revised tentative plan, and as it says here, the main reason for that was to basically see if they would have an opportunity for even further development once these properties are annexed into the city of Grants Pass. Here we have a general map of the property location. You can see called out there at the southern property line, the Tokay Canal. What strikes that property in a perpendicular fashion is Southwest Hudson, which is the road from which the new road will be constructed. And here we have some zoning information. The zoning that is shown as EF, Exclusive Farm, WR, Woodlot Resource, RR5, Rural Residential, 5-acre minimum, are county designations, and the other designations are under city jurisdiction. We've got general commercial and then a mixed variety of residential properties. This is just an aerial that I was able to generate from Google Earth, and you can see that at this time, the property is very heavily treed. What is not depicted here, it would be too difficult in such a view, would be to have a good understanding of the steepness of slope here, and I'm sure that you saw in some of your other application materials that it is quite sloped. This is a map that we typically provide at every hearing. U.S. Geologic Survey map and depiction of slopes over 15%. And now for just a quick review of the sections of our Rural Land Development Code under which we'll be reviewing this application. Tonight, of course, is tentative plan, and we'll be going through the standards and criteria for that. The review authority, this is where it is called out in the code that the Planning Commission is the appropriate review body for this application. 51040 talks in great detail about all the requirements that the applicant has to meet, all the materials that they have to turn in. And then lastly, we've got under Article 76, consideration of wildfire and emergency safety standards. As Chair Wright was mentioning, this application is taking into consideration not only standards, but also criteria. Criteria are subjective items that we turn our attention to. And this will play very importantly in the application as we move through the evening. I'll leave that up for just a moment for folks who've never seen this kind of information before. What we can and cannot approve this evening is shown here under review authority. This slide goes into some detail about the various types of information, again, that the applicant is responsible for. Here we talk a little bit more about wildfire and emergency safety standards. One of the things we're going to be thinking about tonight as we go through the application is the emergency access that the applicant has proposed. There were some questions earlier on as to the availability of the pathway that they identified in their tentative plan. I did receive on Friday from the applicant's representative an easement document which is supposed to serve as justification for their ability to use that pathway. Because I received it after you got your packets, I'm going to enter this into the record now, and I have a copy for each of you, if you'll excuse me a moment. I do have several additional copies. Although late last week and early this morning, I did have several individuals from the surrounding area contact me about this application. I did not receive any written comments from neighbors during that public comment period. There were a few agencies that made comments. They're listed there, and those comments themselves are in your application packet. And lastly, proposed conditions of approval have been prepared. Those are listed in Exhibit C of your packets. Are there any questions?
Can you explain Exhibit B, why we have the page in there on the city requirements?
When the application first came in, I did reach out to the city and ask them if they had any comments, knowing, of course, that this application is only under county jurisdiction. But in a case like this, when we're looking at urban reserve, we need to think about the future, and in some cases, a long-range plan. And so I thought it was important that the applicant get a feel, excuse me, for what might be required in the future. Those comments are not germane to this meeting this evening, but it does demonstrate that, excuse me, it does demonstrate that the city is aware of this potential development, and also that the applicant is aware not only through those comments, but also in similar separate discussions with them.
Thank you. Any other questions for staff?
Yes. My big question was about having rights to the proposed emergency access. And the first time that I've even seen where this emergency access is was on the big map, and I want to ask, is the emergency access this piece of road here? Is that
it is.
Meant by emergency access?
That's okay. Correct.
And in this, excuse me, there we go. Okay, and in this, which you have just handed to us, it looks like it's a
easement agreement.
It looks like it's a contract of sale with a number of easements on it. Is one of the easements that's on here, somebody looked at this and seen that one of the easements on here is for indeed this little piece of property right here?
That is the claim that's being made by the applicant.
Okay, that's okay. Have they shown you with any more specificity which, because this has a number of exhibits and a number of easements on it. So which one are they talking about?
It does have multiple easements on it. Because I only got it on Friday, I have not had a chance to fine-tooth comb it, and it was my hope that the applicant could speak in detail about that.
Very good. Thank you.
We'll ask him when he gets there.
Good.
No other questions for the staff? Proponents? Applicant? If you'd please. And again, anyone who steps up to the mic, please state your name and address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Mark Cross, Ryan Cross Group. My address is 112 North 5th Street, Klamath Falls, Oregon, 97601.
Welcome.
Thank you, commissioners. And also wanted to thank Nora. This is my first application in Josephine County, and so she helped help me get things through with kind of a little bit of a rocky start, but I appreciated all the help she gave me getting things through and to this point. And I'm still old fashioned, so I apologize about this. You can see. Is there a way to focus that, James?
Plus button on the front.
So, and maybe this one will be better then. I brought this overhead just to show mainly the slope. And again, we are talking tonight about a 7-lot subdivision. There may be a little confusion since we had to show the city what a potential development could look like once this property does come into the city. Their main concern with a 5-acre subdivision is them losing all of their urban reserve property that they've identified for this parcel. So what the current owner is wishing to do is divide a 7-lot subdivision right now. He will retain lots 6 and 7 and a portion of 5 potentially for future development until that comes into the...
Can you pull that mic closer to you,
sorry,
please?
Until that property comes into the city, he plans to retain the lots 5 and 6. Lots 1 through 4 right now are planned to be sold as part of this subdivision. So this is the same map without the contours shown. And so we are proposing, and I apologize, on subdivisions of this acreage, it's very difficult to make exhibits, and that's why I included the full-size maps in your application. We are proposing a single public access from the end of Hudson Lane. Hudson Lane is currently a city road that has 28-foot wide paved width with curb and sidewalk on both sides. The county standard is a 28-foot paved width with no curb and sidewalk, with 2 11-foot travel lanes and a 3-foot bike lane on either side. So the paved width will match up very well with that existing road. As far as having a secondary access for emergency access, we did put a cul-de-sac at the end of the public road. And from that point, it will be either gated or bollarded to provide only a emergency access down to Upper River Road. Of course, we still need to review some easement documents to make sure that will suffice with the existing rights that a neighbor has to the north of us on that easement. If we are unable to block that road, then we will just sign it as an emergency access if they still have rights over that. And we are still, I only got the easement document fully on Friday as well, so I'm still reviewing it, but I do have a copy of it here. Again, difficult to see, but this is the tax lot map of the property to the south of us. You can see Hudson Lane here is a 50-foot public right-of-way that dead ends into the subdivision property. Over here, you can see that there's an actual 60-foot easement that provides access to the property to the north. That easement is broken up into 2 separate tax lots. For some reason, they were flag lotted. Kind of interesting here with the L-shaped flag lot. But that 60-foot easement does cover those entire flags. This is the easement that was just given to you. And we can't read it, of course, so I'll just point on page B3 of that easement, the last two paragraphs. So basically, when the property was sold and broken up originally with this document, there was two 30-foot easements retained on those flags to provide access for the property that we're developing right now. It only says that it's for ingress and egress, and that's all we're proposing at this point. The second paragraph is interesting. If you read it, it essentially says that the owners of that land under that 60-foot easement will allow that 60-foot easement to be dedicated as a public roadway someday. Mm-hmm. Basically, we're not asking for that at this point, but if that property was brought into the urban reserve, that is probably going to be one of the main access points for this property, and then we would move forward with trying to exercise the right to do that. Again, we're not asking for that right now. So again, right now access will come from the end of Hudson Lane with seven lots, single family homes. We aren't anticipating a huge traffic impact to Hudson Lane. Hudson Lane, where it ends currently, has the Tokay Canal crossing right there. And so we have reached out and talked to Grants Pass Irrigation District. And we will actually be piping as part of the development when this, if this were to get approved tonight, we would be turning in engineering plans that show the Tokay Canal is going to be piped from approximately this location over to approximately this location. And that pipe will go under the new road. Mainly it's being piped on the east side of our road because there's been some issues there with some, I guess there's a concrete channel there and it's just not in good shape. And so the developer has agreed to pipe it through that section as well, even though we aren't really affecting anything in that area. With final engineering, that we will also identify the exact locations of the driveways. Since a lot of the driveways are going to be on steep slopes, we will be required to do engineering plans specifically for those driveways with our road plans. And again, the idea of this development is to try to minimize the impact on that steeper hillside to keep the bigger 5-acre lots on the steep parts and reserve the flatter areas of this property for future development. With that, I would request that you guys grant approval of the 7-lot subdivision tonight, and I'm available for any questions.
Any questions? None for the moment. We'll get back to you if we do.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to say thank you for clearing up the easement. Thank you.
Yep.
Any expert witnesses on your side? Others in favor? There being none. Questions of staff? Anyone have any questions for staff? There being none. Opponents? Any organized opponents? We'll get to that in a minute. So we're looking for organized stuff right now. No oppositions against. Others in opposition. I've got two cards for people that want to talk, Dennis Brown and Bill Price. So we will get to you shortly. And nothing. All right, well, let's get the two I got first. If you're one of them, otherwise, if you've got a card, please. So, Dennis Brown. neither one of these are marked for or against, so we're just kind of stuffing you in the middle, and you can tell me what you are.
Thank you, Your Honor and Commission. I live at
Name and address, Dennis
Brown, 341 Fairfield Lane, and my property is just south.
Pull the mic to you, please.
We share the common 330-foot property line.
Okay.
And my main concern is there is no storm drainage plan attached to this proposal. Apparently, it's not required, but unless there's a reason or extenuating circumstance, and I've lived there for approximately 25 years, and I'm here to tell you there's a reason to have a storm drainage plan, because I would like this gentleman to tell me what he's going to do with the stormwater and where it's going to go. And I now currently have already been inundated with water off of that property for many years, and it's getting worse as the development grows on the north side of the railroad tracks. It's mostly coming from the Forest Hills subdivision. If the city would stop the water from coming underneath the railroad tracks and just cascading down the hill, it would eliminate a lot of that winter water that's there. So right now, as far as my concern, it's that water. I don't know what they're going to do with it, and I really do want to know, and I think it should be a mandatory plan should be part of this proposal so everybody knows what to expect. I have one other concern, and I know that a seven-unit subdivision doesn't usually require any TIR traffic study. However, I agree with the planner. We must think about the future. Right now, there's 32 homes below it, and Yonser is putting in 52 approximately just to the east of it, and this seven. We already have two failing intersections in that area, very, very close. And I believe that the safety of the citizens of the community will be greatly compromised if no traffic controls are considered. Not just from this development, but all of what's happening right there and is going to continue to happen. Anybody have any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Brown? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Price?
Bill Price. My address is 670 Hunt Lane, but we own the property from 2400 Upriver Road just north of where they're subdividing on the other side of the railroad track. And my biggest concern was the easements. We have, it's not an easement, it's a public road of necessity that goes in there and goes across right where they're talking about putting the, what he said, the emergency exit or whatever it is. That is where we go across and go on up through that property and go up to our property. And I don't know how, they've never contacted us and told us how they're going to tie it all in. And that's what I want to be informed. I'd like to know how they're going to do that. Plus, I'm with the gentleman here as far as the runoff water. They drilled a well right in the middle of a creek down there that runs 6 months out of the year. And a lot of water comes down off of that hill behind us all the way up there and comes down through that one little plot. And I see where they're going to put a culvert in. So, but they're going to have to do something because that water does go down. And it's got no place to go when it gets to those properties in front. It runs down there, and that really, a lot of water goes through there. And I've lived there since my folks bought that place in 1959. And we've seen years when you couldn't get across there because there was too much water running. So that's something I don't see anybody addressing. And I think it should be addressed how that's going to be handled. And like I said, they haven't come to us and told us how they're going to handle this easement thing because we have the public road of necessity, which goes up through there. And then I know there's an easement beside us, but I thought there was two easements beside us. And so I don't know where they're planning on going in. And they haven't never come and talked to us, so I'm in the dark. And I'd like to be informed on how they're going to handle that because that is our main way of going into my sister's house. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Price.
I actually have a question, Mr. Price. Unfortunately, I'm not quite able to visualize what the access is that you use that they're going to be that
at 2400 Upper River Road.
If you have a map right up there. It's right down by your. Yeah, if you could point to where you're. So that's the emergency access.
Right through where they're going to put the emergency access, and the cul-de-sac, and then goes on up and circles around. You see the little loop that goes back and goes up across the railroad tracks. That is the road up to my sister's house.
On your bigger plan, P1 and P2, it would be note number 5.
And it's listed with the in the records as a public road of necessity.
It is interesting. Okay.
And we're not against the subdivision.
That's right.
I want to state that. I just think there's a couple things that need to be addressed, and they've never got a hold of us and told us how they're going to handle that, and we'd like to have that done.
Okay, so.
I'm sorry, I missed your name. Would you come back to the podium, please?
Yes, Mark Cross.
Mark Cross. I normally write it down, but I missed you this. Could you address his concern of the easement? And I'm kind of concerned, if this is an easement and we're going to make it an emergency access only, how is this going to affect existing travel and existing property owners?
So that's something we need to research as well. We are aware that a property will need access through our property. As part of this development right now, it is planned to either come off of Hudson and then up through their property. If there are restrictions on that and we cannot do that, then we would plan to keep that emergency access only open and then sign it and not block it off.
But it looks like Mr. Cross needs to be able to get across. It looks like Mr. Price needs to be able to get across Lot 5 when he needs to.
That's correct.
Okay, and so.
He could access it from the cul-de-sac once the cul-de-sac is in place.
But still, that means that that Lot 5 is going to have this road going through the middle.
Correct. And we're definitely aware of that, and that will be kept. So basically, that road kind of follows the draw up behind there, and it's not going to affect any areas where they're planning on building or doing any development. So
we haven't seen, at least I'm not aware, that we've seen an easement for that going across Lot 5.
To the best of our knowledge, it's been platted on T1 and T2. Note number 5 follows it all the way from the railroad tracks.
It's already existing. I think it was on Google Maps. That little line almost followed the draw, I believe.
Correct.
There's a picture, but we're talking about the legality of it now.
Correct.
Mr. Price needs to be able to.
Right. And a normal easement would have a record with a meets and bounds description of an easement, and that's right. Not what we have here. And so a lot of times with these public roads of necessity or there's different terminology for a roadway that's been used for a long time, typically that will remain in the exact location that it has always been in. So it's likely that we will have to keep an access all the way through there in the same location that it is now.
Okay. To the staff, I don't see that anywhere in any of the conditions. I wonder if perhaps it should be added as a condition.
It's on my list.
It is on yours?
Oh, I just wrote it.
Oh, he just wrote it.
I make notes.
Oh, okay. There you go. And we wouldn't be opposed to that at all. We're definitely aware of that access that needs to be maintained through the property.
Is that what you were referring to when you said it was either going to be locked for emergency access, and if not, left open and just signed so these people with the easements can still use it?
Correct. And so based on our title research of this property, we're not really seeing that, and so we're probably going to see the easement or the language better on their deed, which I need to go pull.
Right, and that's what we're missing at the moment.
Yep.
Would you address their stormwater concerns, please?
Yes. Stormwater plan and report and calculations is under condition number 7 existing. We have no problem complying with that condition. With a development like this, basically our plan is to take as much of the surface runoff from the paved roadway as possible and dump it into existing storm drainage systems that would exist in the right-of-ways. And we've also talked to Grants Pass Irrigation District about much of this runoff comes down right now and really inundates the irrigation canal, mainly because it's bringing that sediment with it. Since it's decomposed granite, a lot of that granite ends up in the ditch even now, even before Mr. Yonser owned this property. And so we're aware of that, and we're going to be working with Grants Pass Irrigation District to try to improve that. We're looking at a possible stormwater facility above the road to try to slow that water down and collect a lot of that sediment before it reaches the canal, which would keep the canal capacity available to take more water.
Something in the lines of like a bioswale?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. The issue with traffic, I want to try to keep my comments to this seven-lot subdivision. Again, traffic with a seven-lot subdivision, I know there may be other problems in this area, but I don't see, and planning didn't see, a huge impact to those issues with an additional seven of lots. You know, just going into the future development, this is why this access and this access point would be very important to that future development, so that you're not, you know, proposing another 60 lots to go back out Hudson, which wouldn't be desirable to many of the neighbors here, I'm sure, or neither to Mr. Yonser, just because it's limited access through Hudson. So we'd like to, you know, note that if there was any future development, there would be two new accesses to Upper River Road.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Cross.
Fill out a card, yes.
And they're in the back. Staff, is there some reason why we didn't get better storm and drainage? Normally, we have those at the application status so we can.
Nora Schwartz, County Planning. Yes, I can address that in two ways. One, there was no call for it from County Public Works. And secondly, in the Rural Land Development Code, Section 51.090 is entitled Requirements After Tentative Plan Approval But Before Construction. Under that section, A4B, site grading and drainage plans with calculations. That said, as I mentioned, it spells out in the code that the county engineer does have the flexibility to ask for a storm drainage plan prior to tentative plan approval, which is what we're doing here tonight. He did not feel the need for that, nor did he feel the need for a traffic impact study. And so we do not have either of those documents this evening. I would like to add, however, that Mr. Brown did come see me this morning. This is when I learned about the challenges that his property has had, evidently over a period of time. And I think that it's extremely important that we address the proposed conditions of approval in such a fashion so that his issues are fully addressed. If that includes a continuance, because we don't have that documentation, obviously we've got that option as well.
Thank you. You addressed it appropriately, accurately. I appreciate that. So that answered the questions. We've had two more cards submitted, so we'll continue with those two cards. Howard Volkman. Again, state your name and address at the dais.
Howard Volkman, 2396 Upper River Road. So my concern is the emergency road of access. I own two of those properties that have the easement, not the road of necessity, so I just want some clarity on where it's going if it's going on the public road of necessity, which I was told, or is it going on one of my easements? So that's all I'm asking.
Okay. We'll have Mr. Cross address that in a moment.
Thank you.
And you're to the south of them? Make sure we know which property you're referencing when we're talking.
So if you
access
right here,
yep.
This might be, there's actually a little sliver right here that I bought. It's like a quarter of an acre. And then we actually own this other piece over here. But I just want clarity on where this is going, because right where this road's at is currently where my driveway's at. Mm. So there's two slots there. And the public road of necessity actually comes up on this side, on the adjacent piece of property.
So they're side by side?
Yeah. There's actually three pieces. I own this piece. There's like a little sliver, quarter acre. And then there's another piece that's owned by Richard McSwan, my father-in-law. And that's the public road of necessity that's been being used by Mrs. Price for years.
Okay.
I just like clarity on where it's going
to
be.
Okay. We'll ask Mr. Cross to address that when we're done. Mr. Volkman? Mr. Gina?
Yes.
Gina?
Bill Gina, 2384 Upper River Road. So my property is also adjoining that. I also have a rental at 2392 Upper River Road, which is part of this easement issue as well.
Would you show us on the map, please?
Absolutely. Finger? So literally here at this tower, am I right? Is this about right here?
Yes.
Near the beginning area, okay, right off Upper River Road, I have my end of my property, then a rental that's just north of my property. And so I am neighbors to Howard, and so we both have the same concerns, where this easement actually runs, okay? And the eventuality of potentially making this into a public road, you know, it's going to have to meet widths and drainage and sidewalks and fire hydrants and... So we clearly want to understand what this is, okay? And if it's going to be a bouldered thing and it's permanent, which is essentially what's happened in the Hudson subdivision, you know, that's right off of Ford in Hudson. There's a subdivision just to the south of me, and they have, you know, bouldards right there because there was an argument over access to the road. This is, you know, 10 years ago. Same issue here. Basically want to understand how they're going to travel up this road, and it essentially is an oversized driveway is what's going on there.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Gina?
Thanks.
Mr. Cross, can you add some clarity to their questions, please?
Third time's a charm, right? It's yes, so again, the 60-foot easement is over both of those. What I would imagine seeing right now is we need, for an emergency access to be considered an emergency access, it needs to be 20 foot in width. And so what we would be looking at, I would imagine, is to keep that access separate from a private driveway at this point. I mean, if the road, I keep forgetting what we're calling it, the public road of necessity, is that right? And so the two easements, I'm sure what you're talking about are the two 30-foot easements.
So that's the confusion I'm seeing as I'm looking at this, and I don't have a detailed map that shows me the driveways versus the public road of necessity. So I want to make sure that I understand where these three are going, which will clarify what they're trying to find out.
So, again, I apologize. This is new to me. A lot of times I'm looking at a big picture at this stage and haven't got into the details of this design yet. So knowing Gary and how he is, he would be willing to work with the neighbors and take into account their preferences and go with that. So what I would imagine is that we would put the emergency access on that 30-foot side, which would be the westerly side, and not affect the private driveway at this point, if that's what they want. Again, if they didn't want that and they wanted the reverse, I'm sure he would be willing to consider that as well. Our issue will be to make sure we have a 20-foot width emergency access, and it could actually be on either side of the 30, or we could take out both a gravel road and an existing driveway and make one 20-foot better road, if that's what they would want as well. Again, Gary definitely likes working with neighbors to try to make a successful project and not work against them. So I can speak from experience on that point.
We certainly always appreciate when they work together versus being ornery.
Correct.
Life is easier for everybody involved.
Especially the engineer.
A question from staff.
Clarification from the board.
Go ahead. We'll let our planning director answer some clarification for us.
Name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the director of community development for Josephine County. Just want to remind the board that they do have the ability to waive the emergency access that is the subject of discussion. If you look closely at the first drawing that you have, which in the bottom right-hand corner is labeled T1, you can see the ghost platting that's going on. You can see how the road eventually will be extended at some time, and you can see the lots that would be proposed there. So if you waive the requirement for that emergency access right now, just know that eventually there will be a road going through, as explained, that would go out to Upper River Road. When that road goes through to, it looks like lot 1, 2, 3, 4 would probably still continue to access off Hudson, but it would extend later to pick up that west end of the development. You see that, or have a question?
Yes. Ms. Chambers?
Yeah, what, I forget, where does it come from that we have to have an emergency access there if we have the road itself? No, but if we have the road itself, why do we have to have an emergency access as well?
Well, sometimes roads wash out, get blocked, trees go over. So you want to make sure you have an emergency access. So the code requires it, but then the code also gives the ability to waive that. There's two things that can happen. One is the applicant could have a fire mitigation. So if he didn't want to have that road there, he could have a fire mitigation plan prepared by Wildfire and Emergency Safety Standards Review Committee. So we could do that. Or he could provide a written statement which explains the reason why the emergency access is not practical or feasible. So if you say that he doesn't have to have it, when he applies, he would submit a statement that says, per the Planning Commission, the emergency access would not be required.
Okay, I got it. Thank you.
Sure.
We're making a recommendation to the BCC, correct?
Not at this point. And just for clarification to those conditions you have that are in Exhibit C, the part that I just referenced is item number 23, which talks about the ability, which talks about that access requirement.
It sounded familiar to me.
Pardon me?
It did sound familiar.
Okay. Any questions on the commission?
I'd like to have Dennis Brown come back up to the mic and ask some questions about
Mr. Brown, would you please join us?
Dennis Brown, 341 Fairfield Lane.
Yeah, I'd like to see where exactly your property is located on the map. And your major concerns of water, where does it run off from and to?
On the east side and in the middle.
On the mic, please. We can't hear you.
On to the east and to the middle towards the center of our 330-foot line. And the whole mountain is just wet. There is a 12-inch storm drain at the end of Hudson Lane, and I would certainly hope that they would use that instead of contributing to the Tokay Canal. You know, there's a thing called the Clean Waters Act of America, and the Tokay Canal dumps into a pond down further on Upper River Road. Then it's pumped back into the Rogue River, which is considered a moving body of water, and that's a clear violation with all that erosion, silt, and filth, and soap suds coming down the hill. They should have infrastructure to capture the stormwater in the city storm drain that's right there, instead of allowing it to inundate
and over-control the Mother Nature's runoff. This runoff is coming from development, largely, what didn't happen before. So the development I'm talking about is above the railroad tracks, to the north, and largely, I believe it's called the Forest Hills Subdivision. There's a couple hundred lots or whatever there is up there. And I think I get most of their water down pretty close. So, you know, it just kind of goes downhill, and I'm tired of it. And now that the property is going to be developed and not uninhabited or undeveloped, it's an opportunity to make some improvements.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, staff or comments? I think you've given the comments. Rebuttal? Not that you have a whole lot, Mr. Cross. We don't have any designated opponents and no sir rebuttal. Any summation? None needed, none asked for. Okay, so let's close the record for the public and bring it back to the Planning Commission, and let's talk about it. Mr. Ockenden, we'll let you start.
How about if I don't want to?
Tell me ahead of time. You're at the end of the table.
Right at this point, it's only seven. It's a seven-lot subdivision. It's not a major subdivision. It's when it gets developed to the multi-unit housing, they'll have to go through another phase to get all that ironed out,
and
to get traffic studies.
And the traffic study.
And to get everything else will come in at that point. So far, I don't see a lot of impact going on with this seven-lot subdivision. So there is some, in the easement issue, maybe we should drop that as for now, and that will come into effect in the next phase of it.
Okay. Mr. Simone?
Yeah, I'll just continue off as far as the easement. It's covered under the proposed conditions of approval under item 23 that the planning staff brought to our attention, that the applicant shall demonstrate that they have written authorization. So that looks like it's going to get flushed out, yeah. So I don't think that will be an issue. And the other issue was the storm drainage from Mr. Brown, and again, that's covered under condition 7. Final storm drainage construction drawings include calculations and summary sheets. So the two items that I saw that were most concerned to neighbors are covered in the conditions. Mm-hmm. So I'd go forward with approving the tentative plan.
Okay,
my turn. I guess I have a question. If I'm understanding things correctly, maybe I'm incorrect here, but the 20-foot wide emergency access road is this portion right here, not up here.
Correct.
Right.
So I guess for me the big issue is the access to through this road. You know, on number 23 where it talks about having written authorization for the emergency access, I would want to see some kind of written a written easement for access to this upper property as a condition. I appreciate the applicant, you know, talking about, you know, how they've worked with homeowners and all that, but you know, my background is real estate, and you know, verbal agreements tend to get messy really fast, and I would like to see if something is a condition to make sure that's in writing.
Okay. Ms. Chambers?
I basically have no problem with this. I would like to have the condition added of that the in the 2020 24 proposed conditions of approval. I'd like to have one added that the road of necessity, was that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
That the road of necessity is taken care of before it's moved forward. I mean, we do this, but with the condition that they take care of that. And I did have some questions about some of the other conditions that I don't quite understand why we're doing them. I don't know if this would be a proper time to ask staff about that. I'm seeking guidance.
You certainly can ask
okay.
staff.
Please. All right. Number eight, that the developer is going to have to prepare CCNRs a fire safety plan and that sort of thing. I don't quite understand.
It's required on all plans.
I've never seen it before.
Fire safety is required on all construction. The CCNRs are on subdivisions. And
okay.
they don't have to be on subdivisions. They just, that's how they choose to do so.
Okay. Now that's.
Do you want me to answer?
Well, sure. Good. No, that's excellent. Thank you. The next question that I would have is, you can bat this one down, Julie, also.
Okay.
Okay. Number 11, submit copies of approved septic site evaluations for each lot. I don't know why we're doing it at this point. Go ahead.
Our code requires that those evaluations be done to show that the lots are buildable.
Okay.
Because if they're not, if you can't get a septic out there, we wouldn't approve the lot.
Good. Okay. Okay. And number 17, I don't know how he can provide, how the applicant shall provide copies of any shared well agreements. He hasn't sold the properties yet. He has no idea who's going to be sharing wells with whom.
That would be pre-existing.
That is correct, but we don't know if there's any wells out there at the current time. This is, standard language that if you have any wells out there and they are shared wells, or if he's going to be putting in shared wells at this point, we need the agreements on file.
Okay. All right, so we don't know whether he has any or not. Okay.
Yeah, mostly if they have a pre-existing, we want to know about them beforehand, not afterwards.
Right. Okay. Number 22. I suppose it's probably a term of art that I'm just not familiar with. The applicant shall follow the appropriate procedure, as indicated, city grants pass for, quote, vacation of the street plug. What is a vacation of the street plug?
So a street plug is basically the dead end of a road.
Okay.
So if they want to open that road up, remove the plug so they can now extend the road, they need to get permission.
No, that's that right there. That's that right there. There's the plug right there.
And it goes to here. And if they want to open this up, then they have to vacate the plug and make it a road.
For the northern terminus of Hudson Avenue.
You had it right, John. Your finger was on it. I think it's that one.
That's this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
all right.
It just opens it up so they can drive.
I do enjoy the term vacation in that. And that's all I have. Thank you.
No question at this time.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to pronounce your name until you tell me how to say it. So we'll meet after the meeting.
Sure.
Yeah, my biggest concern is I just see a lack of easement information in front of us. I think the application is well done. The application we're not doing is the future build out, which has no bearing in what we're doing tonight. We're only doing a 7 lot. I am disappointed not to have the drainage and stuff that the engineer should have put before us. We would have preferred to have that so we could get a better look at it, but with what's been brought up, we know that it's going to be looked at this point, so still we would prefer to have it in front of us.
I would also ask that Mr. Cross and Mr. Brown get together and see if they can address that road to a comfort level, and Mr. Price. Get you three talking and see if there's a mutual benefit that everybody can come to, because anytime it's mutual, everybody's win. You know, long term, it might just help everybody in that grand. So I would ask that you guys sit down and have a cup of coffee or something. It's not a demand, just a request. Because we're concerned about the easement to Mr. Price, but Mr. Price, when they get the new road built in or run Hudson Lane out, then you'll be able to access it from there versus off of Lower River Road. So that will still be available to you, but again, the easement concern. Right. And then we need to make sure whoever makes the motion that they condition the GPID pipe, because that was a late arrival into the conditions. And GPID and the applicant has stated that they would actually do that pipe. So there's no argument as far as that goes. It just needs to be in the condition. And other than that, I think it meets the requirements for what we've been proposed and what we've been asked of.
Chair, does condition 19 satisfy your concern about GPID?
It's right here. Go find it again. Yeah. We just didn't have a request from GPID prior to, so we weren't expecting that. So condition 19 does address the GPID. Checkmate. All right.
Before we proceed, I'd like to have a very short break, if we may.
Okay. We're going to take a 3-minute break.
Yep.
We'll be right back.